This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 332 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from the other side of the island, Rob Johnny on the Spot Coates. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thanks, Bruce, and it's a great honour to be on this program that I've enjoyed for, it must be about 3 years ago since I discovered it.
Cool.
So it's a real pleasure to be taking part.
Oh, well, thank you. It's nice to have you on board. Okay, so Glyn obviously put you on the spot, dubbed you in as a guest for this week's episode. You sent us three images a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Glyn then gave his critique of those images last week. Didn't give me a chance to say what I thought of them. What did you take away from Glyn's comments?
He was gentle with me, much more gentle than he was with you, which was to be expected, I suppose. He had the most to say about the Eiffel Tower shot.
Sure.
And I got to say, what he said about cropping it so that the fella in the white T-shirt was out of it, it was, you know, once he'd said that, I thought to myself, yeah, that's right, it would make it a better photo. Because he appeared to be the focus, well, apart from the Eiffel Tower, the fellow in the white T-shirt was the second focus of the photo, and, of course, he was completely unimportant to it. So
yeah, right.
Yeah, and, you know, I was pleased with the comments about the leading lines and whatnot. So, yeah, it's, as I said in my comments back to you during the week, getting comments on your photos from your wife or your family or your friends on Flickr is one thing, but getting it from someone that you don't know who earns his living by teaching photography, that's something entirely different and obviously much more valuable.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I liked about that Eiffel Tower shot that I didn't get a chance to say on last week's episode was I felt like the leading lines in it took you right through the image and then out of the corner via the ray of blue light. In the, you know, the pathway and the tops of the two rows of trees or hedges, whatever they are, sort of all lead you to the base of the tower, and then you get sucked up the tower because it's such a bright yellow light on this, you know, sea of very deep blue.
Yeah.
And then at the top of the tower, you've got this, you know, beam of blue light that just shoots off out through the top right-hand corner of the frame, and it's almost like it takes you on a journey. It, like, sucks you into the image to the Eiffel Tower, and then, you know, it's like you're up the elevator and then, boof, you're beamed off out into space. I really liked that.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I'd like to say that I waited, and because that rotates that light up.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it rotates, yeah. So the beams, you know, they're 180 degrees to each other, so they sweep around.
Right.
And I'd like to say I waited till the angle was the same as the hedges, but, of course, it wasn't. It was just a snapshot. And I couldn't really alter my position either because I didn't have a tripod with me, so I had to rely on sitting the camera on some fence posts that were
Okay.
Somewhat limited in the point of view, but having said that, you know.
Yeah, right. What camera was this taken with?
A Nikon D7000.
Nice. Okay. And do you remember the settings? I haven't looked to see if there's any EXIF data in the image.
I don't know them offhand. See them, of course. But, yeah, the whole scene was fairly brightly lit.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were all sitting around. I think it's 11 o'clock the light show comes on. And
okay.
Yeah, it's a, you know.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was as I think you or Glyn or someone said last week, and I admitted too, it was my memory of the wonderful evening it was. You know, it was a warm June evening in France, in Paris, you know, the most romantic city in the world. So, obviously, that colours my
Your memory. Recollection of it.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Whereas, as I say, therefore it's all the more valuable when someone that's completely indifferent to all that, like you or Glyn, comments on it.
Yeah, nice.
and just takes it as an image.
Yeah. All right. Any thoughts on Glyn's take on the statue in the park?
He was kind of, that, as you pointed out, I think I must have mentioned in the email that I sent with it, it was a guided walk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we didn't have time to muck around or, you know,
yeah,
anything. So, yeah, it was just a snapshot. So
what made you take that image?
Gee, that's a difficult question.
What was going through your head? Like, you know, you see a complete stranger that you don't know. I'm assuming you don't know the guy.
No.
He's just standing there leaning against a statue. What made you want to take a photo of that?
I might have taken a photo if he wasn't there. I might have taken a photo of the statue because it's an unusual statue.
Yeah.
As anyone that's actually seen it, you know, it's this sort of nude woman but lying down with a back to where I was with a hand out. But the fact that he was sort of nonchalantly leaning against a foot, either listening to his iPod because he had earphones in, or he might have even been talking on his phone, you know,
with
earphones in. It just the juxtaposition of him and the statue.
It almost, I don't know that disrespectful is necessarily the right word, but I kind of feel like there's a little bit of that in that, you know, there's this, you know, probably priceless piece of art.
Yeah.
And this guy's just like, oh, this is a good place to lean.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose, you know, he might have lived across the road from the park and walks past it every day, you know, whereas to you or I visiting Paris, it's quite a novelty and a wonderful thing to see that statue. But, yeah, obviously it was just somewhere to lean for him.
Right. And then the third one was the candy.
Looking over the balcony. Yeah, that was just, we were at beginning of last year, we were in Sydney and at Darling Harbour.
Yeah.
Looked over the balcony and here's this brightly lit, very, very colourful lolly stand.
Yeah.
So I took two or three shots and I think that was probably the best one.
Yeah, nice.
Mm.
Cool. So what's your background in photography, Rob?
Well, I'm a baby boomer. I was born, well, I'm the same age as India.
Oh, okay.
I was born the year India got its independence. So anyone that's interested, which they probably aren't, they can look that up.
Yep.
1947. So I grew up in the, you know, as a kid in the 50s.
Yeah.
So I can remember the family box brownie in the little, you know, 2.5-inch square snaps with the little figures in the distance. Yep. And then my first camera was when I was an apprentice. I must have been about 17, I suppose, in the 60s. I bought a brownie star flash.
Okay.
Which was a, you know, if you Google that, you'll see it was a plastic bodied camera that took 127 film, and it had a built-in flash reflector on the top.
You know, right.
Body. So, I used to take snaps and when I went away with my mates and whatnot. And then I got into going to the car races at Warwick Farm and Oran Park and whatnot. So I bought my first SLR, 35mm SLR, which I think it was an Exa 500.
Right.
I don't know what happened to that. I certainly haven't got any more. So I had that for a while, and then I upgraded to a Pentax SP1000. That was in 1974, up in Darwin. The cyclone. We were up in Darwin when Cyclone Tracy went through.
Oh wow!
And my wife and the son evacuated, and I was wandering around in the city with a mate of mine that I worked with. We stayed there. We worked for, you know, we were in the building trade, so we stayed on. And the local photographer was sweeping the debris out of his shop, broken glass and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I somehow got talking to him, and I said, oh, you know, I'm just about to buy a Pentax SP1000. I got my eye on one of them. And he said, oh, I've got one here. So he sold it to me for half price.
Wow.
So he probably wrote it. Yeah, it was probably written off on insurance.
Yeah.
Which was fair enough. Yeah, so I had that from 1974 until I bought my first little point-and-shoot digital in the early 2000s. And
wow.
Then we went to Europe in 2011, just after we retired, and my son had a a Nikon D70.
Right.
So it offered that to me to take, and which I did, and you know, the scales fell from my eyes, sort of thing, and I realised what a lot of difference there was between a little point and shoot and an
SLR,
a proper DSLR. Yeah. So shortly after that, I did a bit of shopping around, and I ended up getting the Nikon D7000, which I've still got.
So why didn't you stay with the D70?
Well, that was his.
He was only loaning it to you.
He was only loaning it
to me. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Which he never uses it, I've got to admit. He's given it to me. Yeah, it was only a loan.
Right.
And, you know, I looked at Canons and several other brands, but I ended up sticking with the Nikon and got the D7000. And sort of been tempting to upgrade to that, but I haven't reached the D7000's limits yet, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, a better camera is not going to let me take better photos at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm pretty much in the same boat with the A850 in that I feel like, you know, that there are still things I could do better. The only reason that I would like to upgrade that camera right now is because I see all the new stuff that Sony's bringing out that is so much better at low light than my 850, which is now a 6 or 7 year old camera, you know.
I've heard you say that, yes, yeah. About low light capabilities. Yeah.
I mean, its maximum ISO is 6400, and 6400 is absolutely unusable. 3200, you would only go there unless you were, you know, really desperate.
Because of the noise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, 1600 is as far as I want to push it, you know. And you've got to apply some, you know, fairly heavy-handed noise reduction at 1600 ISO. So, yeah. Anyway, I'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. A mate of mine that I've sort of met on via Flickr that lives in Perth, and we, you know, we go out taking photos together. I'm just looking it up. He's got a Sony SLT A99.
Yep.
If that means anything to you.
But, yes, it does.
It's obviously a much better camera than mine. It's got a tiltable screen on the back.
And that's right. All
sorts of other things, you know. So I recognise that there are better cameras out there than the one I've got. But as I say, for the moment, and being retired and not rolling in money, I'll make do with the D7000.
Yeah. The SLT is an interesting beast. For those who don't know, it's single lens translucent, where instead of having an opaque mirror at 45 degrees like you do in an SLR that reflects, you know, the incoming image, you know, up through the prism and up to your eyepiece, instead of that being an opaque mirror, it's actually a translucent mirror. So what happens is that I think it's 70% of the light goes straight through into the sensor and 30% of it is reflected up through the prism to your eyepiece. So it means that what you see through the eyepiece tends to be a little bit dark because you're not seeing all of the photons of light that are coming through the lens. And 70% of what's coming in is going straight through that mirror and onto the sensor. So it's a very interesting technology.
He tried to explain that to me one night when we were out photographing the Milky Way, actually.
All right.
You're better off looking it up. So I did look it up, and, yeah, I saw that. It surprises me that the 30% of light that doesn't reach the sensor, isn't deleterious, is that the word, to the
final image?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously it works, yeah. And it doesn't make that clacky sound.
No, that's right.
When you press the shutter.
That's right. And I think what they do is, if I remember correctly, they run like an amplification of that 30% of the photons that is reflected up into the prism. They then amplify that so that you're, you know, at least seeing something that's recognizable through the eyepiece. So,
yes.
Yeah. So what sort of stuff do you like to shoot, Rob? Obviously Milky Way, but...
We've been out with him a few times. Mainly landscapes and architecture
Yep.
and a bit of macro. I'm not into street photography or people photography.
Yep.
As I said, that first email, you know, I deliberately chose some photos for you fellas to critique that it did have people in, because I knew you wouldn't, you know, I didn't dare send Glenn some architectural photos or landscapes. But we had our first grandchild born last May, so I'm sort of into portraits as, you know, to that extent. I'm looking forward to the day, actually, in a few years' time when I can take the sort of photos that Glenn takes of his little girls, you know, those lovely photos where he dresses them up and they pose for him, and I'm hoping my granddaughter will grow up with me pointing the camera at her, you know.
Yeah,
and, nice. And be compliant as far as being a model.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess the earlier you start them, the sooner they get used to it.
Yeah, well, I think she is fairly used to it. Yeah. Just about poses now at 11 months.
All right. Well, I've got a few bits and pieces on the rundown of stories that I thought we'd cover tonight. Yeah. The first was one I saw Adam post this on the Facebook wall, but it was I had also picked up on it as well, and this is a couple of weeks old now. This was something that we had on the list for last week, but we just didn't get to cover it. And that was the new Lytro cinema camera, 755 megapixels. So just when you thought the megapixel race was over,
yeah,
and then everyone had conceded that we didn't need to chase it. No. This thing, 755 megapixels and 300 frames per second.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a lot of data. I'd hate to think what kind of...
Is there any indication of what the damn things were?
I don't know. I'm guessing that this was debuted at the NAB show over the last couple of weeks in Las Vegas. And I'm just having a quick scroll down through the article to see if there's any indication as to the price. I can't see anything there yet.
No dollar signs anywhere, is
there? No, not yet. But I imagine it'll be pretty expensive. I mean, this thing will shoot massive quantities of data. It's not going to be cheap. But it's obviously, you know, it's designed as a cinema camera. It's not a still camera. My mind just boggles at the amount of data that needs to be captured.
Yeah, you'd need a pretty big drive of some sort to put it all on, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I'm just trying to do a rough calculation in my head. 755 million times 300. So, well, 700 by 300 would be, 21,000. So it's like 2 terabytes a second or something. Yeah. That's just insane.
Yeah. So. Not having read the article, is it aimed at the movie industry, is it? The cinema industry?
Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah. But it certainly wouldn't be aimed at even the serious amateur, would it?
No, I wouldn't think so. So, yeah, very, very interesting.
Down a bit where it says trickle down, the heading.
Yeah. Yep.
Down it says, so does this mean that light field cinema is just for the ultra high end and not for the likes of you and me for the foreseeable future? And then it talks about
Right.
No. Yes, right now. But gee, be a while before you can walk into your local camera shop and get one of them,
I think. Yeah, you'd want to be carrying a pretty hefty checkbook, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. All right. Well, we'll move on from that, because that's it's not a still camera, so our interest is limited.
Yeah.
The other thing that I came up with this week, and I'm sure most of us will have seen this if we follow any number of, you know, photography blogs, is that On One have just announced a new RAW processing software called On One Photo RAW.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is actually out yet or if it's just been announced, but basically this is looking like another competitor / alternative to Lightroom. What I did find interesting about this particular interpretation is it doesn't use a cataloging system the way Lightroom does. Like, it doesn't build a catalog. It simply allows you to dump all your images from your camera's memory card straight to a folder on your computer. And you can then simply just browse that folder with on OneFoto RAW, and it will just read all of the images from there. It doesn't actually have to create a database like a Lightroom catalog.
I see.
It'd be interesting to see what that means, you know, in real world applications. I mean, they claim that it's super fast at reading the RAW files and generating a thumbnail and all that sort of stuff, but I'm always dubious of claims like that, because that can only be referenced to whatever system they were using, you know, to come up with this subjective idea that it's super fast at rendering thumbnails. Well, yeah, if you've got, you know, a Xeon processor and 32 gigs of RAM in the system, I'm sure it is super fast. But what about for the average user who's running a, you know, maybe a 3.5 gigahertz processor and only has 8 gigs of RAM? You know, is it still going to be as snappy?
I see it says the current class of RAW-based photo editors all have their heritage from the early days of digital photography, when most digital cameras had less than 10 megapixels and computing power was a fraction, blah, blah, blah. When used with today's popular 42 and 50 megapixel cameras, existing programs can often take seconds to render the image. So it looks, you know, according to them, it's aimed at 2016's cameras sort of thing, not the year 2000's camera.
Yeah. Mm. The interesting thing is that they haven't given a price to buy this outright if you're not a member of Plus Pro. On1 Plus Pro is sort of a membership that On1 offer at $150 a year.
If you
are a member as a, you know, Plus Pro member at the $150 a year, then you get On1 Photo RAW thrown in with your membership. Now, what else you get with that membership, I'm not exactly sure. And I'm not sure what they're going to charge for this product if you're not a member of Plus Pro. And be interesting to see whether or not it will be offered with an outright purchase price, or whether it will be a subscription model.
Right down the bottom, it says price and availability. On1 Photo RAW will be available this fall, which I guess is our spring, isn't it?
Yep.
You can pre-order On1 Photo RAW today by becoming an On1 Plus Pro member at $150 a year.
Yep.
Plus Pro members receive a perpetual license for all On1 apps.
Okay, so there you go. Right,
and
so a perpetual license.
And you'll be the first to receive the app once it becomes available. Looks like if you join this On1 thing, you're going to get it,
So basically $150 a year, but you are going to get perpetual updates forever for as long as they support the product.
But then, as I've heard you and Glenn say many, many times, where does this megapixel, super megapixel thing end? You know, do you really need 50 megapixel camera?
Look, the majority of us don't.
No.
You know, let's be honest.
Yeah, I see. There would be people where it would be an advantage, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see what that looks like in the real world once it releases. I'm assuming around about August or September of this year.
Sounds like it,
so watch this space.
Yeah, yeah.
The next one was from Adam on the Facebook wall, and this was on photocounter.com.au. Backups a bother, say photographers. And this is a story about photographers are losing the images they capture and other irreplaceable data because they fail to adequately back up their memory cards, computers, tablets, and smartphones, according to new research from Europe. Now, I don't know why anyone would be guilty of not backing up their images these days. I mean, you know, I mean, I've had a backup philosophy in place for a few years now, and even I don't do it as well as I should, because, you know, the general rule is you need three copies of something. You know, your images, there should be a working copy that's on the computer that you use all the time. There should be a backup copy that you keep elsewhere in your house, whether it's on an external hard drive or on a network-attached storage drive or even backed up to a USB key. And then there should be a third version of those images, which is backed up off-site, so that if your house burns down and you lose the two copies that you had in your house, you haven't lost the only copies in existence. Now, I have a second copy of my images on an external hard drive sitting in the cupboard 6 feet from where I'm sitting now. And occasionally I do think, oh, yes, I really must send some backups up to Google Photos, which I do. So some of my stuff I have three copies of, but a whole lot of it I only have two copies, and that's, you know, the ones that are on my computer that I'm recording on now and the backups that are sitting in the cupboard across the room. But, you know, if the house burns down, I'm toast.
Yeah. For the last couple of – about 2 years ago, I think it must be, I bought a 1 terabyte external drive, I think it is, and in June and December, you know, twice a year, I back up mostly my photos is mostly what goes on, and that stays at my son's place.
Right.
You know, and he vice versa. He backs his up, and we've got them here in our.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, but I've got to admit, I do only have the one. I do only have two copies of everything, not three.
Right.
But yeah.
But the fact that your second copy is off-site is kind of a, you know, a double safety in that respect.
Yeah,
so
I can't remember whether, you know, something I probably read online said that's what you should do.
Twice a year is not a lot, although it's probably a hell of a lot more than some of our listeners are doing.
Does it
not bother you that, you know, if things went completely haywire, you could potentially lose up to 6 months of your work?
Well, it should do, shouldn't it? Yeah, now I'm bothered. Yeah. No, you're right. I should make it, well, four times a year then, shouldn't I? I mean, we see him once or twice a week, so that wouldn't be a problem.
I suppose it's a bit more of an effort for you because you've got to make the trip to your son's place to pick up the drive.
Yeah.
To make the backup, which is...
As I say, we see him, you know, at least once a week, so
it'd
be hard work. I've got to admit, if I went, you know, halfway between those two times a year, say in March I went on an overseas trip or trip over east, say for instance, and took swags of photos, I would go and get it off him when I got back and back them up, you know.
Fair enough.
Just for the photos around Perth and whatnot, you know.
Yeah.
I figure twice a year is enough, but yeah, you've got me thinking now. I promise I'll do it four times a year.
Yeah, I'm a bit anal in that respect. I've got backup software that runs on my computer all of the time, and I have reminders in Google Calendar that pop up on the first 4 days of the month. That remind me, you know, in the evenings of the first, second, third, and fourth of the month, that I need to plug in my four respective backup drives.
Oh, yes.
Because I've got different drives for backing up different types of data.
Yes, I see.
And then the backup software I've programmed to run at 1 a.m. on the second, third, fourth, and fifth of each month. So basically on the first of the month, I'll get a reminder saying, hey, plug in, you know, it might be the photos drive. So I'll plug the photos drive in before I go to bed. And at 1 a.m., the software will run and it'll run a backup of my photos folder to the external hard drive. And so then I wake up on the morning of the second and I unplug that drive and put it back in the cupboard.
And
that way I just, you know, I don't have to think too hard about it because the reminder pops up, tells me, hey, plug in that drive. So I just go and get it and plug it in and think no more of it until the next morning.
Yeah.
So
a couple of years ago, I think it was pretty more when I first started listening to you fellas, I sent you an item. You won't remember it because you no doubt get so many. But I was out with my camera down by the Swan River one morning, and nailed up to several trees around the car park was an A4 size note in a plastic folder saying my car, I was parked here on certain date, not long before, my car was broken into, my laptop was stolen, and there were 6 months worth of of photos on it. I can't remember whether he actually said not backed up, but the, you know, that's obviously what he meant. It was the only copy he had of his photos, and he left his laptop in his car and it was gone. So that was a reward off it or something. So not a good practice.
No. The ones I feel really sorry for are the stories of, you know, the photographer who's shooting a wedding and has, you know, like their camera bag stolen before the wedding's over, and it's like you don't even have a chance to back up that stuff, you know. I really feel for those guys, you know, because I think anyone who's working in the industry, you know, particularly if you're working taking, you know, wedding photos or whatever, you've probably got a good backup strategy in place. So, you know, I know that I do. Like on the rare occasion when I shoot a wedding, the moment I get home, it's, you know, immediately run a backup of all of the raw data, you know, just so that if anything goes wrong, I haven't lost it. Even though I might not have, you know, all the processing done to it, you know, with the dust removal or the cropping or whatever, at least you've still got the files.
You've still got them, and with something, you know, one of like a wedding, it, you'd look such a fool to go back to the happy couple and say,
exactly. And I mean, even if you were to refund, you know, the whatever you charge them to shoot the wedding, it still doesn't give them the images, you know.
Never forgive you.
No, exactly. So anyway, that link will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to read up on that story. The other one that we got from Adam was, in 30 years of photography, I've never had a service experience this bad. And this is a story by Brian William Jones from April of this year, 2016. He's obviously a devoted Leica shooter, and he's had a Leica monochrome, which I don't remember the exact details, but he's had issues with it. He sent it off to be serviced, and this thing has been in and out of the workshop for 6 months, and he still hasn't got it fixed, apparently. Like, wow, that's pretty bad.
It is, isn't it? It's like these horror stories you hear of people that buy a car and, you know,
this car's a lemon.
First 6 months backwards and forwards to the dealers,
Wow. Yeah. And given the hefty price tag you pay just to, you know, flash around the name Leica, you would think that they would have, you know, some sort of system in place to make sure that their customers were not without a camera for 6 months.
Yeah.
Even if it meant replacing the camera, you know, or giving them an ex-demo model to shoot with while they get yours fixed or something. Yeah. I don't know.
It strikes me that companies now, not just not just photographic companies, but any company now, 10, 20, 30 years ago, if you had all sorts of trouble like that with a company, no one else would know about it. But now with the internet, it's so easy to spread these stories around and say, you know, don't whatever you do, don't buy a Leica because blah, blah, blah. And you'd think these companies would be sensitive to that, wouldn't you?
You would think so. He's got an update at the end, right towards the end of the article. Update from the 8th of April. After 8 months away from the time I originally sent the camera off to Leica to calibrate the focus, the Leica monochrome came back and, you guessed it, it's still out of calibration.
Wow. And his next comment is, this just begs
incredulity.
Yeah, it certainly does too, doesn't it?
Wow. Yeah. So it's obviously the issue was one of, you know, back focusing or forward focusing.
Yeah.
And they've obviously just not been able to nail the focusing of the camera. Wow. Yeah.
A Leica's German? I'll show my ignorance. Would it have to go to Germany?
I don't know.
You know, even so, the plane gets from here to Germany in 24 hours.
Exactly. I mean, given that this is on Petapixel, I'm assuming it's an American story.
Right.
And therefore, he's probably an American photographer. And I would be very surprised if Leica don't have a service department on the continental US.
That's a good point.
So, you know, I can't believe that the camera's been in transit for the majority of that 8 months.
It beggars belief, doesn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. A couple of stories from Steve Peters. The first one of which is this animation was created using old photos from the early 1900s. And again, this was on Petapixel. And this is fantastic. They've used that technique. I've seen this done in, you know, some video footage every now and again. They'll take a still image and slice it up into different portions and then put those different portions of the image on different video layers, and then using things like After Effects create 3D movement around the various portions of the image. Now, obviously, when you take it...
I was going to say, is that how they do it? Is it?
Yeah.
There was recently a series on television, and it was Tony Robinson, you know, Baldrick.
Oh, okay.
Doing a series about the Wild West
of
America. And that was very prominent in those shows, that they had these obviously old photos of Buffalo Bill and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they were 3D.
Yeah. So they'll slice, you know, like a car out of the image, and then they'll, you know, obviously they have to artificially create the scene that would have been behind where the car was, but they've got the rest of the image to use as a background, and they can then, you know, 3D animate to a certain extent. Anyway, the video is well worth watching. It's only it's a shade under 4 minutes.
I watched it this afternoon, and yeah, I was absolutely gobsmacked. Yeah. So clever, isn't it? Yeah.
Very clever. Mm. And I would imagine quite a time-consuming thing to try and produce.
Yeah. And on the audio side, I was thinking when I was watching it, it's even got a good soundtrack to it, hasn't it?
You yeah, they did some nice stuff. Work with the sound effects.
Yeah. Very nice. Excellent.
And the second one that we got from Steve Peters was from lightstalking.com. And it was, what can billiards teach you about light and photography? And this was a great article all about the way light travels, and it always travels in straight lines until such times as it comes into contact with some physical obstacle, at which point one of five things happens. It either gets reflected, dispersed, transmitted, absorbed, or refracted. And this article goes into all of those five modifications to the transmission of light, and what all of those different types of modification mean, and how they impact the way light affects our photography. This is a really good read. I really thank you for this one, Steve. I enjoyed reading it, and even though I read it a few days ago, I look at it now as we're recording this and think I need to read it again.
I get emails from Light Stalking, or however often they send, and I saw this one and I thought, I must have a look at that later, and I'm sorry I haven't read it yet, because I could make some intelligent comment.
It's a good read. I mean, you'll probably find when you read it that a lot of it is stuff that you already knew 80% of or 90% of, and it's just good to get that refresher on, you know, the way light interacts with physical objects, you know.
Why? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really enjoyed reading that, and I will definitely give it another read. We then have one from Rakesh, which was Sony. I'm not sure which cameras Sony have incorporated this into. I think it might be in the new 6300, actually. Let me have a quick look. How to set this on a Sony A6300. What this is a feature which allows you to register, in air quotes, into the memory of the camera a series of faces. And you can prioritize these faces. So the example that Gary Fong gives in this video is, if you had a bride and groom, you're going to shoot a wedding, you could take a photo of the bride and you could register her face in the number one slot. And then you can take a photo of the groom and you could put his face in the number two slot. And then whenever you're taking a photo and both of their faces appear, whoever's in the higher placed slot, in this example that would be the bride, the camera will focus on her regardless of where she is in the frame. It is phenomenal technology.
It is, isn't it? Absolutely incredible where all this is going, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think I can't remember how many faces it said you could register. I think it was something like 8 faces. Like, it was crazy. And it shows some really amazing stuff where he's, you know, shooting video. Because this will work with the video function of the camera as well as the still function of the camera. And he has models, you know, standing on a white backdrop and has them walk in and out of the frame or from front to back and standing, you know, behind each other and whatever. And you see the camera recognize, you know, faces and focus on them according to how they've been registered and their priority in the camera.
Yeah,
just amazing stuff.
Possibly, perhaps behind it is that face recognition technology that you see at the airport nowadays when you come back into Australia and you walk through immigration and it recognises your face.
Yeah, well, I don't know what sort of technology they use for that, but I mean, obviously, it's all related to some degree.
Yeah, somehow they've got it into a tiny little box that you can walk around and point at people with.
Yeah, yeah. So amazing stuff. Thanks, Rakesh. Yeah. And finally, a story from Carl, and this was the video that shows a 20-year-old Nikon film SLR, the F3H, with a faster shutter speed than the Nikon D5.
Jeez.
So, now the interesting thing is that the F3H was actually a very limited release camera. The F3 was you know, mass produced and sold, you know, squillions. But the F3H was specifically developed for the 1998 Olympics, and they only built 800 of these cameras.
Ah.
But interestingly, you can see these two cameras side by side, and the F3H, they've registered it achieving around about 13 frames per second, and the D5, which is the, you know, the current Nikon flagship as we're recording this in April 2016, achieves 11 frames per second. Either way, I mean, do you really need 13 frames a second?
Yeah.
I keep saying, you know, if you need that much, get a video camera. But that is crazy. I mean, obviously, if you're a sports shooter, you've got an argument for it. But But yeah, that is crazy. 13 frames per second.
Yeah.
It blows me away because that was a film camera.
I was just, I'm just thinking along those lines. Could the film be advanced 13 times in a second?
That's it. Like, that is just phenomenal. To be able to move the entire strip of film, you know,
you'd think it would
30 odd mils across and stop it, you know, still enough to take an image and then move it again and to do that 13 times in 1 second.
That
is crazy. Like, imagine the stress that must have put on the actual film stock.
Yeah, you'd think the friction would...
Like, the acceleration and the deceleration of, you know, doing that 13 times a second.
Right down the bottom, I notice it says the F3H was out of frames in a little under 13 seconds once it burned through the
screen. That's crazy.
Ridiculous, yeah.
3 seconds to get through a roll of film. Wow. So, yeah, thank you for that one, Carl. I'm never going to need a frame rate that high.
No.
Not for the stuff I shoot, but, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Did you come up with anything in particular that you wanted to share with us, Rob?
No, I didn't, but I'll make a promise of doing something. 2 or 3 weeks ago, you said, you talked about Lightroom and Photoshop, and you said you'd be interested to hear from anyone that uses an alternative.
Yeah.
Post-processing. I haven't even got Photoshop. I use Photoshop Elements. I've used that for several years.
Right.
Last year, this chap I mentioned earlier on that I go out photographing with here in Perth, he taught me into getting Lightroom.
Okay.
Because before that, I'd heard how good Lightroom was for cataloguing and whatnot. And I've got my head around. I use Windows Explorer for my catalog, and I can use... find things fairly quickly with that, but once he talked me into it, and I've got Lightroom, and I'm very pleased with that. But
so, do you keyword everything?
No.
Right.
No, I don't. No, I don't. I still.
So, how do you find stuff?
If you said, "Where's your photos from Vancouver when we went to Canada?"
So you're relying on your memory of when you took it.
Yes, yes, right. That's it. Even if I say so myself, I've got a good memory for dates.
Fair enough.
And if I want a photo of when we were in Vancouver as an example, I think right that we went to Canada in 2007. I go to that year's folder.
Yep.
Blah blah blah. And I can usually find what I want in a few minutes. I must say, I admit that if it was just, it would be quicker if I did have the waterfront at Vancouver and this at Vancouver and that, and I could look for keywords. It would be quicker, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, a couple of years ago, I bought DXO Pro.
Okay.
Which I think I've heard you mention it a couple of times.
Yeah, and is that like Lightroom? Is that what it's meant to be like, or is it meant to be more like Photoshop?
No, it's not. It's quite different to Lightroom. It hasn't got any... As far as I remember, it hasn't got any cataloging features with it.
Right.
It's not as good as Lightroom, in my humble opinion.
Okay.
So I haven't used it since I got Lightroom. There's a couple of things about it that were very good compared to the Elements that I was using, Photoshop Elements.
Okay.
Its noise reduction was good.
Right.
Its ability to bring up the shadows. You could take a photo of something just about silhouetted against a very bright background, but then you could bring the detail out of the shadows.
Right.
It's good for that.
But I should have asked earlier, do you shoot JPEG or do you shoot RAW?
I shoot RAW. Right. Now, the last two or three years, I shoot RAW, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I recognise the
advantage.
I think there's benefits, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
But so I've just had a new... I've just had my computer upgraded, so I've got to download a DxO back onto it. But what I'm getting around to say in a very long-winded way, what I'll do is I'll dig up some photos of mine, and I'll process them in DxO, and I'll process them with Lightroom, and maybe do a little review and send it to
you. Hey, that'd be great. I'd love to see that.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So stand by. In the next week or two.
Yeah, cool. No, that'd be good.
But no, the only other comment I got to make is how I look forward to Sundays when I can download Shutter's in Photoshop, and how disappointed I am when I click on it and you say, "Oh, Glenn's away again."
Yeah, no podcast this week.
No, it's so I don't know about the other six listeners you've got, but this listener's. Yeah, I really appreciate. And your comment to someone I saw during the week, I think on the Facebook page, about how long it takes to edit and upload and all the rest of it, I can believe that. And
yeah.
It's not wasted. And I'm sure there's more than seven of us.
Oh, yeah. but I tell you what, it's because of the amount of time it takes that I don't ever want to, get into producing a video podcast because the time required to do that would just be exponentially more.
Yeah.
And
also you've got to do this after you've ridden up from North Ryde to the Central Coast.
Yeah.
How long does that take you?
It takes me around about 65 to 70 minutes, give or take, depending on the traffic.
So
an 8-hour workday and a couple of hours of commuting each day. So,
yeah, no, well, hats off to you.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah.
All right.
It's easy for that other sod, your co-podcast. That
yeah, he just shows up.
Last minute and rip the crap out of your photos.
That's it. And then logs off and that's the end of his commitment. That's it.
Yeah.
Hour a week. That's how much he puts into it.
We still love him, don't we?
Yeah. I wish I could get down to Melbourne more often to go out shooting with him because he is great to shoot with. For anyone, please don't tell him I said this because...
No. Well, he doesn't listen to the podcast.
We'll never hear the end of it. Yeah.
I won't tell him, no.
But he is great to shoot with. And for anyone who's ever thought of going and doing a workshop with Glyn and just keeps on putting it off, seriously, make a commitment to do it, because you will laugh until you hurt.
I can believe that.
And you will learn so much, even in one afternoon of shooting with him. He's great fun, and always an enlightening couple of hours to spend with him, I can tell you. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome, Rob. Well, thanks for coming on and giving us your feedback on Glyn's feedback.
Yeah, well, it's been a real pleasure, and you know, it's like I said, I don't know whether honour is the right word, but it's been a real pleasure to be on and you know, give a little bit back.
Yeah, well, thank you. Mm. All right,
and I look forward to Sunday to see how incoherent this has been.
No, it's not that bad. Glyn is obviously away for another couple of weeks, so if anyone would like to put their hand up to be a guest next week, please sing out, you know, Monday or Tuesday, because I think, actually, I will need to record. Next week I can record any night other than Thursday night. So if anyone would like to be a guest next week, sing out, drop me an email, studio@audiotou.com. And, if I don't hear from anyone, I'll either round up and, you know, someone to interview, or I might just cover a few things on my own. We'll see how we go. Or we'll have a week without a podcast.
And can I just say to anyone that's wondering whether to take you up on the offer, I was all day today, I was thinking, geez, I hope I don't make a cock up of this, but you've made it very comfortable.
Oh, good.
Just like having a chat, isn't it?
Well, that's the idea. I mean, I've always tried to keep it informal and, you know, fairly off the cuff. We try not to, you know, we don't pre-script anything. I mean, we obviously have, you know, a little text file of notes of things that we're going to cover. But
good luck with that, trying to pre-script Glyn.
Oh, yeah. No, waste of time. All right, Rob. Well, thank you very much, mate, and you have a good week.
Thank you, Bruce. And next time I'm over New South and up the Central Coast, I might see if I can arrange to meet up with you sometime.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If you're ever over this way, please, yeah, give us a yell.
Got a niece and a nephew that are still on the Central Coast. So.
Oh, cool.
Mm.
Excellent. All right. And we'll talk with you again soon. And I look forward to hearing from you regarding, some
DxO.
AB yep. comparisons between Lightroom and DxO, yeah.
Yep, okay, thank you.
Yeah, all right, all the best. And, until we speak with you next, take care.
Bye.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
Another AudioTU.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.